This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
Guys, over on the blog, fill us up with all of that blog feeling, that blog mood, and I wonder what it was like on the blog over the last week as Harbaugh comes back, which we talked about last week, and then you see a variety of coaching moves from Josh Gattis leaving to the elevation of Matt Weiss, the co-coordinator and collaborative play calling process being back, Jesse Minter being hired, Grant Newsom being elevated, Ron Bellamy and Jay Harbaugh being moved. A lot to get into with the MGO Blog Roundtable crew, starting off first with Brian Cook. Brian, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Doing great, my man. Seth Fisher, good morning.
Morning, Sam. And I just want to thank you because the blog world has been filled with a lot of lies lately. And I'm glad there's been at least somebody being truthful out there and calling things out. About current coaches, new coaches, and former coaches.
Appreciate that, Seth. And Craig Ross is with us. Craig, how are you this morning?
Good morning. I thought Phil Martelli say that his goal in basketball was to see how few baskets they could score and still win a game. Didn't he say something like that this morning? I mean, great because he's the free throw coach. And in the second half of the Penn State game, they had 14 free throws made and 5 baskets for 10 points, which is I've never seen a team do that and win a game.
Yeah, I don't think I don't know that he wants to see how few baskets you can hit, but certainly the way in which they got there, the message I took from him is I don't care how we get there, as long as we get there, they were able to get that, able to get that win. Speaking of getting there, Jim Harbaugh has gotten to offensive success in different ways. The anomaly, Brian, was a sole play caller, which is what he's had the last 3 years. Now, this new format or this new dynamic is a return to the norm for him in having a couple of play callers in Sherrone Moore and Matt Weiss. I'm curious what you make of that, that sort of reverting to what is the normal feel for him.
Well, it's really hard to tell what the impact of that kind of thing is from outside the program, right? Because you don't know who's calling what plays. You don't know if that's an issue or if that's a good thing. It's really difficult to get like a strong take on that, really. from my perspective, Harbaugh has cycled through a lot of coaches in his time. He seems to make good hires most of the time. And I'm not too concerned that we're going to see a huge drop off here, because this is something that Harbaugh has a ton of experience doing.
Seth?
Yeah, I mean, I think that last year they actually seemed a lot more organized than in years prior, but the 2 years before that, when they, were more disorganized, Gattis was the OC as well. So I don't know if he turned more over to Gattis last year or just had it more centralized. Whatever system they used last year, there were not nearly as many times when, like, they were sitting around waiting for the play until 8 seconds before the snap or something.
Yeah.
I mean, it still happened once in a while, but it definitely had been cut down on. And I thought that probably was something to do with the staff. Like Brian said, it's really hard to tell. But we can see it in the times when they don't really know what they're doing until a couple seconds before the snap. The other thing is last year, by turning the play over to Cade, I thought that the calls were a little bit easier because McNamara was allowed to survey, see what he sees, and then there were a couple options that he could run based off what he saw. And that's a little easier to call if you're the offensive coordinator, because it's more about building the packages that week than it is about calling the play that moment.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, that's a good point. I'd like to echo what Brian said about Harbaugh making good choices with assistant coaches. I mean, I think it was on your site, Sam, where you had a sort of taxonomy of prior coaches and what had happened to them and what they're doing now. And really, most of them are doing very well and are successful at other places. So he has made good choices. And so I don't find that particularly bothersome. Gattis's comments going out the door were a little bit bothersome and a little, I felt, déclassé, but I don't know if you want to talk about that one or not.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, we definitely can dig into that. I think it was, I think it was a poor choice. I think it was an unnecessarily burned bridge, because you can make financial decisions. People make financial decisions sure. all the time, and do so without. You know, and you know, I guess he didn't intend for it to get out, but you got to know that that's going to get out when you send it to 25.
Yeah, it's going to get out. And, you know, when Greg Madison went to Ohio State, I think the program mantra was Greg is Greg, which means, you know, there was a bigger paycheck and he was going to take it. And, you know, most of us understand that. Yeah. And in this case, by my understanding, Gattis made $1.15 million last year, which is pretty good. I went back and I calculated for my 22 years of work as an attorney for Washtenaw County, did I make $1.15 million? And the answer was a resounding no. It wasn't even close.
How many times did you beat Ohio State there, Craig?
I never beat anyone, but still, he was making good money. On the other hand, he reportedly is making $1.6 million in Miami, and so you get it. And so I'd rather have Gattis say, you know, A, the weather stinks here, I'm tired of this weather, and B, I'm making another $600,000 in Miami, or almost that, and so that's that. And everyone would have said, okay, I get it. Mm-hmm. We get it. We understand. Fine. You know, instead, he made a less than lateral move, because look at Michigan's schedule this year and look at Michigan's offense this year. And at the end of this coming year, whoever's the offensive coordinator in this team is probably going to be viewed with some positive regard and will be a candidate for head coaching jobs. But you know, that's okay. I mean, he makes his choice, but the shot going out the door, particularly when Harbaugh sort of did go out on a limb. I mean, here was a very young coach who people didn't think should be the OC, or a lot of people didn't think should be the OC, but Harbaugh believed in him, gave him a chance. And, you know, to some, I think, significant degree, he was successful. And so it's hard for me to get why, out of all that, you know, you decide it's a good time to take a shot at the program because you don't feel wanted. And I'm not sure where that comes from, actually.
Yeah, that one was really weird to me just because of the things that I've been hearing. I was pretty much getting ready to write Josh Gattis head coach. I mean, I figured I knew that they were going to look around and talk to things, but I knew that people on the regent level really liked Gattis. I know that Harbaugh was going to point at him and say, that's the guy. And that had already been made clear to some of the other assistants that, you know, if it's an internal hire, it's going to be Josh Gattis. That feels pretty appreciated to me. And
yeah, man, it's the emotion. I wrote this, you know, emotion can be a double-edged sword. And I think it was in this particular instance, the emotion that he showed in the Broyles acceptance speech, it really conveyed perspective. It really showed that, man, I get that a dude who's never had a sole play caller just handed the keys over to a guy who had never been a, you know, even a collaborative play caller, right? You know, he wasn't calling plays when Mike Locksley was at the helm. So that was a huge risk. And so in that instance, he's like, okay, you can feel in that emotion that he gets that. On the flip side, this time around, you know, Michigan comes at you with an offer that is in your mind, not in the ballpark. And it wasn't, But, you know, it wasn't exactly one of those deals where he went back and said, hey, this is what they're offering me. Can you match this? Mm-hmm. So, you know, Michigan was kind of going blind, betting blind there. But to me, I guess it was an example of a guy who wears emotions on his sleeve, sort of going back over all the events that had happened and looking at them over again through a different lens. Now it's like, well, was he really going to endorse me? Was I really going to be the guy that they handed it over to? You know, did they really value me? When in the moment he was feeling all of those things, but this contract offer made him look at all those things differently. It was just time to part ways at that point. What you didn't, you can part ways and not do it.
And not take a shot.
Yeah, not send that letter that is going to get out. And I know that he, in retrospect, I don't think it was one of those things where he's like, that's not how he feels. I think that's how he feels. But he has to know that that was just a huge gaffe there to send it to 25 players and think that it wasn't going to get out. It was always going to get out. And it harms you professionally to have done that, because now, Brian, there's this thing that, okay, well, this is a pattern, you know, because Alabama, there was some acrimony on, you know, after the fact, and same thing with Penn State. So he has that hurdle to clear now moving forward in his career beyond Miami, because I know Miami is not what he expects to be his last stop.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's fine as far as it goes. I don't. Josh Gattis's job prospects no longer really concern me. So,
right, that's kind of where that is. Let's turn back to Michigan and let me get your thoughts on Jesse Minter. So, what do you think of Minter coming in to take over Michigan's defense?
Well, I mean, it seems like it's a continuity play. This guy has a lot of experience with the Ravens. I wouldn't read anything into 1 year at Vanderbilt. I mean, he improved them from 121st to about 100th, so great. But, you know, yeah, the Vanderbilt defensive statistics over time are probably not really related to coaching talent, I'll say.
Right.
So it seems like it's a good idea. I know his defense at Vanderbilt was significantly different than what Michigan ran last year, but I also don't think that you can really read a whole lot into what he was running, because Vanderbilt talent versus Michigan talent means you can do different things.
Yeah. Someone said to me, Seth, they said, oh man, he has a lot to replace. He's probably like, man, I don't have Aiden Hutchinson, don't have Dax Hill, don't have Dave Ajabo. I look at it differently. He's going from Vanderbilt to Michigan. He can have all Michigan's backups in there feel like he's taking a step up, right? I'm just saying, no disrespect intended, but the guy has to feel like he's on cloud nine right now.
Well, and no disrespect to Vincent Gray, but you're going from him to Will Johnson. So Michigan's getting a big upgrade in speed. And the one thing that you can take away from his Vanderbilt time, I don't even care about the defense that was on the field. He was recruiting speed, and he was talking about speed, and he went after guys when you, like, pull up their profiles and be like, you know, who's this four-star you got out of Louisiana? Speed, 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 speed. So, I mean, this is a guy who values guys who can move. Michigan was building for that. He certainly knows the Ravens system and knows what they were building towards. And what they were building towards, if you look at the Ravens, you know, Judon is not your stereotypical defensive end who's going to be flying, right? They use guys who are, they're going to push their way in, and everyone kind of arrives at the quarterback at the same time. And then they have just so many different looks because they can trust their defensive backs. And you really need the talented defensive back to run that system. So McDonald didn't even get to run the things that he wanted. It was like, you know, maybe a fifth of the kind of stuff that they run with the Ravens, because he had to leave Vincent Gray protected all the time. And that kind of limited the kind of things they could do. Once in a while, they blitz at safety. I mean, that was it. So I think that you're going to see the next level of the Ravensification of Michigan's defense. They're going to have to generate pass rush in ways that they didn't have to last year, because you could be like, Aiden Hutchinson, go through that guy. And it's going to be interesting. Again, you're right. Don't have to talk about Vanderbilt that much, but the speed counts.
Craig?
Jesse, yeah, Mitchell. I mean, for me, I mean, I don't know, but it continues a couple of themes on the Michigan coaching staff. One is, we're going with young guys, because I think Minter is 38, and we're going with guys, in this case, who have some feet in professional football, and which may also help with recruiting. And most of all, what I'm happy about is that Mike McDonald liked this guy. McDonald had worked with him and had recommended him and to Harbaugh, said, look, this guy is smart and knows the systems that I've been coaching in. And so I think there's some reasonable possibility for continuity within your system, plus getting somebody who kind of feels like me. And so that's what I like about the hire. How it's going to work out, none of us know, but it seems like it has the potential to work out.
Yeah, it does, man. I think that the Raven seal of approval means something. I think Mike mm-hmm. McDonald stamp of approval means something. You know, listening back, what I don't know, what I haven't gathered yet is, was his interview so impressive that, you know, Jim just said, hey, that's it. Because I do know that they were looking at a few guys, and I know they were starting the interviews up Monday and reported they interviewed Jesse Minter, and heard after the fact, I heard that, man, he was impressive. And then I heard later on from another source that he was amazing. And then next thing you know, another interview doesn't happen. And mm-hmm. like, man, is it just that, you know, the options sort of evaporated elsewhere? Or was this dude just so impressive that is, so we don't need to look at anyone else? And I kind of think I'm kind of leaning towards the latter, because, I mean, you know, game recognizes game, as they say. And this dude was impressive. He was really impressive in the interview. Now, it has to translate to the field. But you got a lot of excited people in Ann Arbor about the guy that's coming to take over the helm for Mike, because that was one of the things that stuck out about Mike, how other coaches were like, this dude is a freaking genius, right? He didn't want to necessarily have this recruiting schedule, but man, just being able to scheme stuff up, he was brilliant. And that dude is recommending this dude who came in, and they said, man, this dude is brilliant. So hopefully he goes out and does the same thing performance-wise on the field.
I got a question for you guys. As I see it designated, you've got co-DCs, right? I assume Klink is a co-DC.
He is.
And on offense, you've got Weiss and Sharon Moore being co-offensive coordinators. Do you have any instinct on what that means or how that plays out? Or
so I think it'll, just on the surface, my impression is it'll be different. The co-OCs will split play calling duties. And I'm pretty sure Harbaugh said that explicitly in the release. If he didn't, well, that's what I've been told, that they're going to split play calling duties. Haven't gotten any indication that that's going to be the case on the defensive side. I don't even know how they'll be coordinating the game plan together. You know, as far as play to play, down to down play calling, it won't be like the offensive mix where, you know, maybe it's the runs is how I think it'll go. Maybe the run, Sharon, the passes, the pass game, Weiss. I know they in the past they've done situations, so they've had goal line, they've had 2 minute, they've had in the game, and so all of that is sort of laid out. Now how they'll split all those situations up, I don't know. But I don't think you'll have that split on defense.
We had a short period last year when Mo Linguist was still here, when he was the co-defensive coordinator with McDonald, and I remember talking to some people in the program at the time, and the way they discussed them was always equal. It was like Mac and Mo. I got to go ask Mac and Mo about that, or that's a question for Mac and Mo. It wasn't a okay, McDonald's the guy. Now, I don't know how that works on game day or play calling. So I tend to say this all the time. Play calling is like the least part of coordinating. Coordinating the defense is about like deciding what the other team's going to do to you, planning your packages, because what you need has to be in the toolbox, and you can only bring so many things to the game, right? These are college kids. You don't have that much time with them. So it's about what you plan that week, and two coordinators on defense doesn't matter that much because you're reacting anyway, right? So it's all about what you saw, what you want to put in, and as long as the guys work together really well, that's fine. I kind of think they wanted to get Minter, just to go back to what you're saying earlier, like why did Minter blow them away? I felt like he was a guy that they had on their radar last year. And then Mo Linguist came open, and they're like, okay, we got to get that guy. And then by the time they lost Linguist, Minton already taken the Vanderbilt job. So I imagine that he was probably very top of the list. And when he expressed that he wanted to come, they were like, done.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. No doubt. And so you've seen some other moves in there, and this will be a good time to sort of break, give us a little halftime, because he went heavy internal in moving Ron over to receivers, elevating Grant Newsom. You know, that was maybe the a spot where he could have gone outside the program, of course. And in doing so, he shifts Jay over to defense, adding to his Swiss Army knife reputation. So we will want to get you guys' takes on those moves on the other side and get into some basketball. As I don't know about you, Michigan played Purdue much tougher than I expected them to last week. Does that give you confidence about tonight's game? We'll get into that on the other side here.
All right. I had Gilligan's Island come on there. This is Dave Nasternak's idea of a joke. He somehow programs my Alexa so at 9:30, some dumbass song comes on. I had to unplug the thing because I'm listening to the Gilligan's Island.
I'm just impressed that you have an Alexa there, Craig. That's why would amazing.
Well, because it's a high level technology.
Yeah, because you seem to be averse to modern technology.
Well, I have down here in my hobbit hole, I have a treadmill, and I like to have music when I'm on the treadmill because I get bored pretty quickly. And
did you know you could put music on your cell phone?
Is that right?
I just assumed Craig would have a boombox for the music.
I actually didn't know that. But anyway, but I was looking at, you know, at the Michigan 2019 team. When Gattis, I think, wasn't he the OC in 2019?
He was.
Yeah, that was his first year.
Look at this. Offensive line. Runyon, Bredesen, Ruiz, Onwenu, and Mayfield. Last time I checked, every single one of those guys started in the NFL this year.
Yeah, man.
And then their tight ends weren't that terrible either. Sean McEwen and Eubanks. And then they had Charbonnet and Haskins. They had DPJ, Nico, Tariq Black, and Ronnie Bell, and they end up scoring no points against Army, and they get cranked and can't move the ball against Wisconsin. What the hell was going on there? You got a whole NFL team.
Yeah, I think in retrospect, you know, if he would have come in knowing in year one what he knew in year three, his approach would have been a little bit different. I think if he played with that offensive line that you just mentioned, and the running game they should have had that year, and leaning on that as opposed to I don't have the statistics to say how RPO heavy they were, but they're way heavier than they were this year. I think he had some grandiose ideas about what he would do coming in and try to do all that, and it wasn't always successful. And I think the maturation of him as a play caller was like, it's not about your not necessarily about your stuff as much as it is what your guys can do. And he settled into that this year.
Do you not remember throw it to Nico? Like, just talking about that offense is getting me angry again.
that's a case in point.
Yeah.
Just throw it up to Nico. That would have been an example of, hey, what can your guys do best? As opposed to being in love with your stuff, just throw it up to Nico. Same thing this year. It could be very easy to fall in love with your stuff. Instead of being in love with your stuff, run the freaking football. Right. You know, that's good play calling too. That's smart play calling too. That's smart coordinating too. And I think that was his maturation process, at least from my novice opinion outside looking in.
You know, Go ahead.
I'm just saying, given the 2019, it's amazing to me that he still had a job really going forward. I mean, when you look at it in retrospect, I mean, they were number 88 in the country in average yards per rush. Yeah.
You know, another thing, and you got to give Harbaugh credit for this, recognizing this.
Yeah.
What he realized was that staff chemistry was atrocious. Okay. And he addressed it.
Yeah, he did.
He addressed it, and it made a big difference. It made a big difference.
You know, something was wrong that year, that's for sure. Because I look at that offense, They put up 10 against Iowa. They can't move. They're terrible against Army. They're terrible against Wisconsin. I mean, it was an offense that went nowhere. But if you look at the talent on the offense, that's an entire NFL team.
Back on radio, guys.
Except for quarterback.
And the MGo Blog Roundtable crew is back. And so Brian Cook, the moves that they made across the board, Jay going to defense, Ron going to offense, Grant Newsom being elevated to tight ends coach. What did you think of all of those moves?
Well, I mean, that makes sense, right? Like, Jay Harbaugh coaches everywhere, and that's fine. Like, Bellamy makes more sense as a wide receivers coach, and Grant Newsom is a guy who everybody was extremely enthusiastic about when he came back. And I mean, it seems like it's logical all around.
Seth?
Yeah. Bellamy is like one of their best recruiters, and you're losing Josh Gattis for a receiver room that is amazing, but there's also going to be some massaging there because there's a lot of guys there who can play and are ready to play, and you're going to have to make sure they all get their opportunities, right? They lose Daylon Baldwin, they get back Ronnie Bell and run it back again, right? And everyone's a year older. I think most of those guys, interestingly enough, were not actually recruited by Gattis. I think only like Roman Wilson and A.J. Henning, and then A.J. Henning's, you know, J.J. McCarthy's guy. So, like, I think that Bellamy was part of those recruitments. He was receivers coach for a small time during some of their recruitments. So he already knows those guys. So Bellamy's kind of a natural fit, too, as far as, like, keeping that room together, like, of guys that they would want to play for and guys that they'd be happy to get. And Bellamy, you know, that using your best, one of your best guys for that. And then safeties, you know, Jay works everywhere, right? He worked out at running back, he worked out at tight ends. He's been great as a tight ends coach. And he's also now got Minter, who's a safeties coach, back there too. And I don't think Minter was officially given a position. So I imagine that Minter's going to be able to work with those guys too. And Harbaugh's not going to be just thrown into the bus and like, hey, go coach defense. It does kind of set him up for the future. If we need to go with another Harbaugh in 20 years from now or 10 years from now, that Jay looks like he's on the path to being a head coach again. Jay's on the path to being a head coach one day. And I think that Michigan is lucky to still have him around after this whole mess.
Yeah, he's underrated. He's very underrated because his name is Harbaugh. And the assumption by the critics is that he's just there because his name is Harbaugh. But you just check the tape, whether it's as a recruiter or the performance of his position groups, Craig, Jay Harbaugh produces at a high level.
Yeah, I think when in the early days of Jay Harbaugh at Michigan, there was this sense that, well, he was just here because he was Jim's son, and there was a certain sort of undercurrent of feeling, well, this is just nepotism. Well, that's very much changed in the fan base. And the fan base, I think, has a very high regard for Jay Harbaugh, realizes that he's been a success at a variety of coaching positions. And so it makes sense, not just for the program, but for Jay to be coaching some defense. And it rounds his resume. And I think he will be a head coach someplace someday. And it's the same for Bellamy, who took a program at West Bloomfield that I don't think was ever a great program.
Oh, they were awful. They were a joke for years around here. Yeah.
Yeah. And made it, you know, maybe the best program in the state, certainly quite close to that. And so for him to have coached defense and now going back to where he played and as a wide receiver, he's sort of rounding out his coaching resume also. And I could also see him being a head coach at a major program someday. So these moves make sense, I think, for Michigan, but they also make sense for camaraderie within the staff, which I think is a good thing, as you pointed out, may not have existed in 2019. And it's good for the individual coaches. And so it feels like a win-win all the way around the board. And you have to commend Jim Harbaugh for moving in these directions.
And he shifts Mike Hart. He gives him a run game coordinator title. That doesn't relate to play calling in any way, shape, or form. But Certainly you have that. And then you have the recruiting coordinator tag that was put on Mike Elston, which I think was fairly predictable. He ran things at a very high level at Notre Dame, very noted for his ability in that department, you know, can bring, as we saw, some organization, some greater organization brought to the recruiting sort of dynamic at Michigan last year. I think that Mike Elston would be poised to take that to an even higher level by taking that over and pairing with Albert Karshnia over there. Maybe they'll even bring in some more in the recruiting staffer roles, but they definitely seem to be committed to growing that even further. And I got some big time work to do. Someone just asked me in the chat, can you talk about Dante Moore in Michigan? The quarterback out of Detroit King, some work to do there. I think that recruitment, while Michigan, they've definitely dedicated a lot of attention to it. They prioritized him. Man, Notre Dame has come on really, really strong. I think Tommy Rees has done a really good job. I think that he's forged some great relationships over there, and that, you know, the priority for Michigan, I don't know how you do this. Because they've spent a lot of time, they've had him on campus, they've gone out to see him. They got to grow his connection with Weiss. That has to be figuring out ways. If I'm Mike Elston, that's like objective number one. How do I grow the relationship, the connection between Matt Weiss and Dante Moore? Because that is that's the most important recruit in the class right now. He's in state. He's a quarterback. You know, his dad's a Michigan fan. His quarterback coach is a Michigan alum. And you got a lot of things going for you. So they got to figure out a way to sort of stem the tide there. I'm not saying that they're trailing. I don't think they're trailing, but I do think it's a neck and neck thing, at least at this point. And they got to figure out a way to sort of slow the momentum from the opposition, most notably Notre Dame.
You don't think Tommy Rees is going to drop the ball? Because I could put that one out there again if you need it.
I'm sure they'll take all sort of indirect in this, you know, souring the Notre Dame.
We have a file on Tommy Rees. That one's not hard.
I think that move of Mike taking over recruiting, I think that is going to reap positive dividends for the Maize and Blue. All right. So I don't know what you thought, Brian, heading into West Lafayette last week. I admit that I was one who thought they're going to get blown out in this game. That, you know, this is, they aren't going to be able to defend this team. And we know how they can be offensively. Well, Hunter Dickinson goes out and just balls out. And then they throw in a little press and they actually make it a game, Brian. So I'm curious what you thought of that effort. And did you see anything that made you think it can go differently tonight when Purdue takes the court here at Chrysler?
Well, I mean, yes and no, I guess. You know, Purdue didn't have a foul in the first half in that game, and there were a couple instances where Zach Edey was just shoving guys out of the way to get offensive rebounds. So I think you might get a better whistle, but I mean, Jaden Ivey is just a huge problem for this team. Like, Jaden Ivey is the exact kind of guy that Michigan had three guys who could do a good job against Jaden Ivey last year, and they just don't have anyone between 6 foot and 6 foot eight except for Kobe Bufkin, and Kobe Bufkin got torched by Sam Sessoms. So what's Jaden Ivey going to do? I'm like, he was like 0 of 6 from three and then was still super efficient because he was like 7 of 8 inside the line, mostly getting close to the rim on those, and Michigan just didn't have an answer. So, like, it's difficult because Purdue has like 7 guys shooting 40% from three. So that 2-3 zone that helped you against Penn State, probably not going to be a great option against Purdue. And they have the number one offense in the country for a reason. So, I mean, you need that performance from Hunter Dickinson again, and then you need someone else to step up, right? Like, he can't do it himself. And it seems like that's been the story of the season, is that like Michigan doesn't have anyone to take any of the slack away from Hunter Dickinson.
I don't know what the answer for Ivy is. Watching him the last two games, I mean, what he did to Michigan, what he did to Illinois, I mean, it just feels like all you can do is say, just let them shoot jumpers. Like, invite them to shoot threes, and that really might be the best defense, because everything they tried, you know, it just seemed to not work. You want guys to fight through screens, he's too fast, he's too quick, he comes off too tight. You want to show on ball screen, he can split you. He got to the basket at will, so I'm willing to concede jump shots at this point. Just shoot, and if the man can make jump shots, I know he can from time to time, then just tip your cap to him that day, because they have no hope when he puts it on the deck. There was nothing they could do. No one can stay in front of him. No big man can bother him enough coming off screens. No one is affecting him at the rim. Just make him shoot jump shots, Seth. I don't know what else you can do against a dude when he's...
Yeah, I mean, they came up with some pressure to like stop them from getting into sets, but if there's one coach in the Big Ten who's going to like look at the tape and figure out a way to deal with that this time, it's Matt Painter. So, I mean, they used the one tool they had, which is just to stop them from getting into their sets. They ran Jace Howard out there, and he was actually kind of effective. I mean, he's the only wing-shaped guy they really have available on the roster, unless Barnes, you know, pull the redshirt off of him. So, like, that was the only option last time. That's not a great option. So I agree. You kind of have to let him shoot. He was not a great shooter last year, so there's a chance that he goes 2 for 10 or something, and that gets you an opportunity. I mean, there's a reason Purdue is just chomping through everybody in this conference, right?
Yeah, Purdue is just A, extremely good, B, extremely big, C, they can shoot it, D, they match up well with us, and E, they've got a great coach. And so everything about Purdue right now is a problem for Michigan. That said, they were ahead 20-8 and 22-10 in that game. And from there on out, Michigan outscored them. And because the one Achilles heel for Purdue is they're not a good defensive team. In fact, they're a terrible defensive team. They're the number one offensive team in the country, and they're just not that good on defense. Now, Michigan is worse because I think last time I checked on KenPom, Michigan was like number 111 on defense. I mean, we just won 5 of 7 games against pretty good competition, and we fell from 32 to 49 on the, you know, on this in the country on the stat measures. It's just a strange season. I was at Thursday night, I went out, or Wednesday night, whenever night it was. I went out and I watched Ohio U Tuesday. I watched Ohio U play Toledo, who were the two top teams in the MAC down in Toledo. And it was a really high quality game. And I felt that if you put Hunter Dickinson on either Ohio U or Toledo, either one of those teams would beat Michigan. Because they've got, you know, a bunch of guys on the perimeter. They have nothing in the center, but they have a bunch of guys on the perimeter who are quite skilled and talented. And with Michigan, you just don't know what you're getting. In the Purdue game, we shoot it. I think we were like 29 of 52 from the floor. We shot it okay from three. Offensively, we played a very good game. Penn State game, we made 5 total baskets in the second half and no threes. I mean, we outscored ourselves from the free throw line 14-10. And so it's just hard to know what you're getting with Michigan game by game.
And they got good looks. They got good looks at Penn State. And it wasn't just your, you know, Brandon Johns missing three. I mean, you had your 3-point shooters missing threes badly. Like, this is... It was, I don't even know what you do as a coach when guys are missing that badly, but it gets back to a point that I think I talked about last week, and it was hammered home in that game. What this team will rise and fall on their defense, I think, because that Penn State game turned when Michigan dropped that zone on them and they couldn't adjust. And you see Juwan telling them as much as he can, we need to run. We need to get up and down. You got to get stops in order to do that. Right, in order to get out in transition. So too often, though, this crew, and most of the times it seems like the freshmen are the biggest culprits, you'll see it either a waning sort of intensity defensively or focused defensively, not knowing where your help is, or not paying attention to his scout, where their guy is just beating them. And they need to tighten that up, because if they can't defend, you just don't know. To your point, Craig, you just don't know if you're going to go out there and your best three-point shooters are going to be shooting air balls or clanging it off the backboard. That's going to happen to this team, which is why they got to be a constant on defense.
Right. They've got to be a constant on defense, but the only constant on defense so far has been bad. And that's...
You can be constant, though, with your See, I mean, Jamar, coming on, what game was that where he was like, this is unacceptable? Was it the Michigan State game? That was an effort. That was an indictment of effort. He was saying that his team wasn't going hard enough. And I know that that's the thing. You always got to have that on every team, right? Your team has to be, you know, super engaged all the time on any team. But especially on this one, man, they can ill afford to give up all the fast break points they gave up to Michigan State, or to, you know, you got to have the rebounding margin closer against a team like Purdue. You cannot afford to give all the open looks that they gave to Penn State early in that game, because you know what happened? They gave Penn State those early looks, and then they started hitting like – they started looking like Jordan with their shots. When Michigan was getting their hand in the face, they were still hitting shots until Michigan dropped that zone.
Well, you know, the zone, you know, may be an answer or a partial answer for them. I mean, I will say Eli looks comfortable in it and seems able to fill the gaps, the cracks in the zone, you know, pretty well. He surprisingly to me, since Michigan has played very little zone over the past few years, that he seems adept at it. But I don't know. Put Jace in. Let Jace try and handle Ivy. I mean, Jace may be their best wing defender. I have no idea what...
There's a difference between like Penn State getting off their shots, where like they actually will give you half a second to recover, and Sasha Stefanovic, who's just going to put that thing up. And I mean, you can't play a zone against these guys. They'll tear you apart. But that's what they are. They're the second best offense in the history of KenPom after Gonzaga last year.
No, is I mean, it's a catch 22. You play man to man, and you got some liabilities out there. Speed and quickness wise, that they aren't going to be able to stay in front of people. So I mean, you got to do the best you can to try to mix it up, but you just don't have a lot of, I mean, look, it is what it is, right? Devontae Jones is not the quickest guy. Houston's not the quickest guy. I mean, we look on Twitter and they're like, oh, that guy is terrible defense. I mean, look, man, some of these are not effort things. Some of these are just physical limitation things that they deal with as well, that as a coach, you got to try to coach around. And that's what I see Juwan trying to do there, Brian.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the reality of the situation. And I feel very upset at Jonathan Givony, who said that Devontae Jones was the best player at that G League camp defensively. I was hype about that. I was like, all right, if he's doing it at this camp, and probably he was the only one who was giving any effort. I mean, you have 2 6-foot guards who are not particularly athletic, and you don't have anyone who can play who's less than 6'7" or 6'8". So, yeah, it's a definite roster construction issues. And kind of the worrying thing is, if you look at next year's roster, you know, is Jet Howard going to be able to do that? Maybe. But it doesn't look like there's going to be Shondi Brown, unless you can hit the portal and find another one of those, which I would highly recommend.
I guess my hope is that these freshmen, these growing pains they're going through now, will make them better, and then they'll be physically better too, right?
I mean, Frankie's got a long way to go, but he's definitely quick.
Zeb Jackson, I know he's been away from the program for a while, but like that was supposed to be like your answer if you needed a guy like that. So, I mean, they'll get Bufkin around, but like, you know, these athletes that they've got on the team just have not been viable this year.
Yeah. Kobe's going to have to get bigger and stronger. And I think, he definitely got a mouthful, an earful, I should say, from Juwan in that Penn State game. You can certainly see that. But what do you guys see tonight? I want to put you on the spot tonight versus Purdue. And then over the weekend versus Ohio State. Ohio State, they just lost, didn't they?
They were ahead last night by 8 points with 2.5 minutes to go, and were outscored 10-0 in the last 2 minutes and lost.
to what do you think? What do you think tonight? What do you think? What do you think versus Purdue? What do you think versus Ohio State, starting with you, Craig?
I like our matchup against Ohio State because I think you can play Musa on Liddell. He's longer than Liddell. I don't think that matchup really favors Ohio State all that well. Now, even though Liddell's a great player, you know, and now you play Hunter on Zeb, and that's a mismatch. So I like our chances in the Ohio State game. Purdue, the only way we beat Purdue is if Purdue starts bricking it up, because they're a better team, and that's just the fact. So,
Brian?
Yeah, I pretty much agree, is that Michigan needs to get a pretty terrible shooting night from Purdue and then shoot very well from behind the line themselves, which is possible because Purdue doesn't guard the line that well. And Ohio State is achievable, I think. Like, you know, we've seen the EJ Liddell matchup not go well, but I think that's a really good spot for Musa Diabate, especially because they're still playing Young at the four. So you can just swap your usual four and five coverages there and get a lot better perimeter defense on Liddell, and Dwayne Washington isn't around to light up Clark Brooks. Yeah. So I think that's a pretty good matchup for Michigan, and I think that would be an important win for them to get.
Seth, last up, 30 seconds.
Yeah. Jamari Wheeler is not the danger. I'm skipping the Purdue game. We just saw them anyway. But, like, Jamari Wheeler is definitely not the massive guard threat. And, like, that's been the Achilles heel for Michigan, is whenever a guard can drive on him. And Wheeler's just a defender, right? So that's a better matchup for Michigan. I also have written up the last, I think, three games that Michigan played in Columbus. And those are, like, the three worst whistles that Michigan's gotten in my memory lately. So I don't know if you can go in. You can plan on having the better team in Columbus and actually having that be a win. So I kind of think both of these are going to be losses.
All right,
folks. Here, Seth.
Yeah,
the game is in Ann Arbor.
Oh, it is here. I forgot. Yeah. Oh, okay.
So does that change your pick?
Sure. All right. Michigan 74, Ohio State 73.
All right. We got to get out of here, folks. Thanks for listening. You're on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK and the Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports, Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.
To be a Michigan Wolverine is great.